Thank you very much for calling me here and to organize this very unusual conference. We talked today about additional draft manuscripts. It might seem unnecessary to recall, on the one hand, the importance of studying authors' draft manuscript and a different version of their works, and on the other hand, the difficulties of this type of studies in a country like France, which has given the birth to genetic criticism, like critique génétique, in the 1970s. However, what is taken for granted in France is not understood or accepted elsewhere, and even in France, the importance of the critical contribution offered by the study and the genesis of a work does not reach all scholars of literature, and above all, remains mostly unknown to the general public. In fact, one of the biggest problems with dissemination of genetic criticism is given by the difficulty of presenting its result in a friendly and easy manner to the intended public. Printed genetic editions are both too heavy, physically and metaphorically, and too difficult to understand, overloaded by a forest of diacritical marks and by the layers of the meanings which they represent. An example of this problem is offered by the edition of De Hérodias by Flaubert, which include 9 different types of arrows to signify different types of superlinear insertions. Another example is proposed by the national edition of the works of Alessandro Manzoni, and in particular by The Promessi Sposi, an historical novel published between 1821 and 1840, and now proposed in 8 volumes in folio of 1,000 pages each, and whose list of diacritical marks exceeds 7 pages in each volume, and sometimes change from volume to volume. In both cases, the complication of the presentation and layout are connected with the fact that editors would like to represent a final reading text and at the same time to represent the authoring process, which is multi-layered, does not follow a clear pattern or direction, but is sometimes the very reason why one wants to study those artifacts in the first place. In the example on the screen, for instance, we see the reading text on the left and the variants relative to the first paragraph only, as noted on the draft, on the right. To note also that these 2 pages, left and right on the screen, are 588 pages apart in the printed volume. Digital technology has been mentioned several times as a possible solution, or even as the solution, to this impasse, and several attempts have been made to account for the textual variation among different versions and to manage the stratification of drafts. These attempts, which date back to the 1990s, were only partially successful. Some, like Jean-Louis Lebrave's first experiment with the HyperCard software, are no longer accessible for a problem of technology obsolescence. Others focus only on the hyper-diplomatic representation of drafts in a sort of competition between the draft itself and the possibility offered by the digital screens. These latest attempts, if they seem to offer a solution to the needs of several researchers, still fall short on the critical challenges represented by the genesis, that is to say, the possibility of evaluating the different versions from a qualitative point of view and understand, and make understand, the authoring process, as well as the reasons behind it. In fact, we should first distinguish in different theoretical questions that characterize a genetic criticism for which the new medium could offer new opportunities and even solutions. At the risk of oversimplifying the question, and I ask the forgiveness to my fellow geneticians, I have distinguished 3 research areas which are relevant to genetic editing, which can benefit from contribution of computers. First, representational draft. This task is only partially fulfilled by digital facsimiles, since authorial drafts are often documents that are difficult to penetrate without specific skills, and therefore a transcription is almost compulsory. Like all transcription and representation exercises, this is an hermeneutic activity that forces the scholar to question the linguistic and the semiotic aspects of drafts, as highlighted by the addition of the draft of Madame Bovary manuscript that you can see here. Second, representation of the author's creative process. In what order, for instance, in what phases or different parts of the page has been completed, what development phase it corresponds to. This process must often be reconstructed for several documents.
It is in fact not unusual for writers to use more than one support at a time. This is the case, for instance, of Proust. And third, the representation of the evolution of the work. In this case, it is a question of seeing diachronically the evolution of a work or a collection of works through several publication and re-edition, often very, very different. But before getting really to the more scholarly aspect of the question, to see how computer can address these challenges, we needed to consider also the technology side of this. I will start this point with a methodological and epistemological statement. In the humanities, you have to be responsible and wise with the choice of your technology. Digital objects and infrastructures change and become obsolete very quickly, and one therefore have to consider the cost, both in human and finance point of view, of producing a resource, but also the cost of remaking it. Here we can easily recall several examples of magnificent resources that have not stood the test of time and had to be redone or abandoned. In principle, scholarly products in the humanities, in particular in philology, have a very long shelf life. We often use books and editions that are even several centuries old, and therefore, in the production of digital objects and artifacts, we are forced to consider long-term products, even if that means giving up the use of most sophisticated and modern technology. Today, the only technology capable of guaranteeing this type of duration for textual products is the one based on markup languages, such as XML and HTML, and I say that without fear of being contradicted. This consideration led to the development of a digital publishing model based on XML as data model and on HTML for public display. This is what I called the source-output model. Namely, you store your data in XML, the source, then you use some sort of scripting, most often XSLT, to transform your data in HTML, which is the output for public consumption. However, technological sustainability cannot suffice. Logical and semantic sustainability is also fundamental. XML, as we know, has no semantics per se, which means the possibility of inventing one's own custom language for each and new project. This approach, while it could fit like a glove researching its needs, has obvious interoperability limits. To fight this trend, the International TI Consortium was created back in the 1980s. 30 years later, it has produced the most used worldwide vocabulary of XML tags in the digital humanities. Within the TI, several discussions took place and working groups worked very hard to meet the challenges of genetic criticism in an effort which produced a markup model capable of responding to the three challenges seen earlier. Since 2011, this particular sub-model, based on the element called SourceDoc, has proved itself more or less suitable to meet these demands. But that does not mean that all the problems have been solved. If the TI gives us today a downright solid system for encoding text in the pursuit of research goals that fits in one or more of these three approaches, the output of the encoded data presents several problems. And only the first of the three requirements can be said to be more or less satisfactorily supported by current editing models. We could now consider the following case studies, which should illustrate the state of the art on each of these three research areas. For representational draft, I would like to draw your attention again on the edition of the manuscript of Madame Bovary. Here the draft I transcribed one after the others, but the sequence of them, you can see one after the other, does not help to compare the different stages across several manuscripts, and you lose the concept of evolution. Another example is given by the edition of the manuscripts of Samuel Beckett. In this case, you can see blocks of text that has been transcribed, and you see the transcription is inside the text. And then you can check sentence by sentence and to see there is evolution of this sentence across different manuscripts, different versions. But here, what you lose is the integrity of the text, which is parcelized, blocked in little sentences, and the transposition, and all the things, the evolution of the text at large. The second case I wanted to present to you is the one of representation of the creation process. And to discuss that, I will go back to the manuscripts of Manzoni that I mentioned before. What happens here is that you see that this page is divided into two different columns. On the left-hand side, on the right-hand side, sorry, the one in red now, you have the earlier version of the text, which is called the Ferma Lucia. Otherwise, on the left-hand side, the column on the left, you have the second version. What happened is that he sent the manuscript to the publisher, and the with only the right-hand side filled. And then when he got it back from the publisher after the publication of the Ferma Lucia in 21, he decided to proceed to a revision of the text. And since he thought it was a slight revision, he decided to use the left-hand side, which was left white, empty, to make this modification. But it has resulted in a completely different work. So you have one work, a second work, some texts, some that are glued out, some post-it, if you want to call it, that complicate the text. And in some cases, while you have blocks of text that are part of the second block with post-it, as I said before, you have also bits on the first hand side that is actually recovered on the second. So you have blocks that goes from left to right constantly. I prepared a little edition of that in a prototype for which you can see the earlier stages here. But this representation of the text, while is able to present this dynamics between left and right, lacks the ergonomicity and the simplicity to present the evolution of the text itself. And when we said, tried to get to sentence by sentence, the complication and the stratification is so messy that is not as much better than the printed version was. So still on the starting blocks with this research. The third of the research approaches was the one about a representation of the evolution of a structure of a work. And for this, I will talk about the case of Jonas or Jonas Massilius, known as Maironis, which is the most important poet of Lithuania. The main work of which showcased substantial changes in the text, in the collection of the text. Each version of its main work, the poem collection called Voices of Spring, expressed, in fact, important changes from an historical and a cultural point of view. Namely, it witnesses and embodies its changes of regime from the Tsarist Russia to the independent republic, changes of languages and spelling through the codification and the writing of Lithuanian language subsequent to this political change, and the change in the cultural role of the author and of the work, which became respectively the father of Lithuanian nation and the de facto national anthem. We can see, for instance, the case of the most famous poem by Marionis called Lietuva Brangi, Dear Lithuania, in which we have in the first edition, the one on 1891, count 16 stanzas and 62 verses. The last edition, the one in 1927, counts only 6 stanzas and 32 verses, and where not a single word is the same as in the first version. So we have 100% of changes. At macro level, if we look at the content of the collection, The Voices of Spring, we've seen that across the first four editions that have characterized very important moment of the history of Lithuanian, there is an almost linear progression and evolution. So you see the colors, you have blocks that repeats themselves in the same order, they just become bigger and bigger and bigger. On the contrary, in the last edition in 1927, it's completely different. The title is changed, has become simply poems, and the rationale of organization changes completely, reflecting that the main scholar, what the main scholar of Maironis, Paulus Ubiasius, called a change on the literary canon of Lithuania. In this case, the simple juxtaposition of various versions is not capable of telling the story of the evolution, a story practically ignored by most of the critics and, of course, by the general public. At the moment, this story is told only by articles and scholarly reviews, but could we think, perhaps, of a more simple, intuitive way capable of transmitting this type of information, thanks also to the representation possibility offered by the computer? Furthermore, this reflection raises all sorts of new questions. when a work in evolution stops being the same work and becomes something else? Is the work of 1895 the same work of 1927? When the title changes, the internal structure changes, the underlying conception changes, can we still speak of the same thing? Similar question could be asked in the case of the Promessi Sposi just seen, which see a changes of title from Ferma Lucia to Promessi Sposi, of structure from four volumes to one volume, of language from the Northern Italian Koine to the Florentine language, and of poetics. I conclude here, speaking about the fact that nowadays, even if the data model seems to be solved, or is it? We can talk about that later if you want. For a true digital philology and a real advancement of research, data model is just a point of depart, not the end of the story. Research on user-friendly intuitive interfaces capable of communicating the story behind this complex and fascinating object, the draft, is only in its infancy. The research on draft manuscript seems so far concentrated on the transcription and the hyper-diplomatic representation, which is still too little in terms of theorizing and to the representation of publishing and modeling of semantics of draft. And there is almost no discussion devoted to the semiotics of representation of the encoded data, which otherwise represents a major and innovative research field. The point here is that a digital edition or any scholarly artifact, digitally or not, should not be simply a transposition of an analogic model into a digital environment, but a real opportunity to explore new possibility, diverse way of interaction, of representation of knowledge, and finally, renewed scholarly objectives. None of the questions asked by the Manzoni and Maironi's cases are per se new, but these have been answered by inaccessible formats and narratives, and not by text representation and presentation. It is time, in fact, to find a new way, not only to formalize our data, but also to communicate them to the appropriate stakeholders. And the latter should not be only the scholars, but must include the general public as well. Thank you.